Today is Tuesday, September 17th. We're starting on page 45. We're picking back up with connective tissues. So last Thursday we talked about the four major general categories of tissue. We covered epithelials last week. Today we're doing connective tissues. And under the connective tissues category, there is a subcategory that we sometimes call fibrous connective tissue or connective tissue proper. And the word fibers kind of gives you an idea about how these are structured. They have a lot of fibers in them. There are six types that fall into this category, and they're easy to remember because they're either loose or they're dense in terms of the way they're organized. And what we mean is, if a tissue is loosely organized, you're going to see a lot of white space when you look at an image of one of these. Densely packed tissues don't have a lot of white space. These cells or fibers are packed so tight that there's usually a lot of color filling the imagery. So just something to kind of keep in mind there. I'm going to start you off with loose connective tissues. Like I said, they're loosely organized. And loose areolar, loose adipose, and loose reticular are the three we're going to cover. Just a reminder on the test today, when you're notating, say, adipose tissue, be sure to say that when you're asked for a specific name, it is loose adipose. They most likely will count off if you don't put the loose portion there for loose adipose. Okay, so disclaimer about these, even though they're loosely organized, these are some tough tissues. Loose areola, for instance, is a pretty tough tissue, so I don't want to give the idea that just because they're loosely organized that they're not strong tissues, because in fact they may be very strong tissues. Okay, so let's start off with loose areolar first. And this picture shows two of the three fiber types that you're going to have in loose areolar. The collagen fibers are big, thick steel cable fibers. They're strong, but they're flexible. And in the background here, they look like a big, wide, fuzzy pink structure. The elastic fibers are thin. They look like a strand of hair. And they sometimes may be a little squiggly because if you pull them out like a piece of elastic, they lose their squiggliness. But if you let them relax, they'll pick up that squiggly appearance. So that's how you tell the difference between the elastic fibers and those connective, or rather those collagen fibers here. You're also going to have reticular fibers, but they require a different stain. So you may not see them in an image of loose areolar. In fact, there's none in this picture because they didn't stain them with the preference that that loose reticular picks up on. You may also look for fibroblasts. What do fibroblasts do for a living? Build the matrix. Good. So they grow fibers. They help to contribute to the matrix of that tissue. And in the background here, these are the nuclei of fibroblasts. There's some really easy nuclei to see up there near the top. So the fibroblasts here are actually star-shaped in appearance, but you may not see their entire outline. You may just see their nucleus. So first impressions, what does this tissue look like to you? Strings. Do you notice these strings run in all different directions? Okay, so that's an important thing to note about loose areolar, is those fibers tend to run in all sorts of directions. This tissue type is found where?
Surrounding your organs.
Good. Surrounding your organs and binding skin to your muscle. Good. So, you know, if you've ever taken the skin off of a chicken, you know, to cook the chicken, or if you've ever skinned any animal for, you know, cooking, you know how hard and difficult it is to get that tissue to separate. The skin is very tightly adhered to the underlying muscle thanks to this loose areolar tissue. Because those fibers run in all sorts of directions, no matter which way we pull or tug on this tissue, it has strength. So it's a strong tissue despite being a loosely organized tissue. You'll notice the word fascia on your worksheet. That's sometimes what we call this stuff. And if you've ever looked at a raw chicken breast, you notice some shiny white stuff on the chicken breast. That's loose areolar. That's sometimes just called fascia. Okay. All right. So where is this one located? Around your organs and binding skin to underlying muscle. Yes, so like in the dermis. Okay. So lots of pictures here. They all have the same underlying theme, which is randomly oriented fibers. Lots of fibroblasts in the background. This one's kind of busy. And yet another one. That is still Lucerular, and so is this one.
You'll be able to see that underside, right? Start with elastic fibers.
You should be able to see elastic and collagen fibers with no problem. Like I mentioned, you will not see reticulars because we don't use a stain on those. But they're there nonetheless.
Looks like a spider web with a bunch of gnats on
it. It does. That's a good way to put it.
And it's loose.
That's loose, yeah. So there's three loose types. Loose areolar. This next one is loose adipose. And this one looks like cotton balls. What else does it look like?
Marshmallows.
I've had people tell me it looks like soap bubbles. Okay, so these are, of course, none of these.
Mothballs.
Mothball, that's a good one. So what's actually in those adipocytes?
Fat.
Fat, yeah. Triglycerides or fat are stored there. And in fact, they're so full of fat that the nucleus is squeezed over to the side. There's the nucleus for these cells. Now, there are collagen fibers found here, but again, they're squeezed out by the fat cells. So if you are going to locate collagen fibers, let's get a different picture. They're kind of wiggled between these cells. They'll lay in between, like kind of you see here. That's a blood vessel running through. These are highly vascularized tissues, meaning what?
Blood runs directly through them.
Yeah, blood runs directly through them. So that's a good thing because it drops off fat for storage and picks off fat for energy consumption. So these are going to be vascularized tissues. Gosh, it's probably been a decade or more, but there was somebody at Myrtle Beach who had a hotel room liposuction set up. And the scary thing about that is if you liposuction fat, then you can damage the blood vessels, and of course somebody can bleed to death if they're not having somebody properly trained in doing that. So thank goodness they shut that down, because I couldn't imagine having somebody take a vacuum cleaner and then lipo out fat tissue that way. A little bit of fat may not be a big problem, but a lot of fat tissue is going to have a lot of blood, so there's a risk for bleeding and infection. So where do you find loose adipose connective tissue?
Breast,
abdomen, around your organs. Okay. Skin-wise, where is it located?
Hypodermis.
Good, good. So what is the function of this tissue?
Cushioning,
insulation, good, fat storage, okay. Any problems identifying this one? Okay, it's probably one of your easiest ones to spot. Loose reticular connective tissue is our next one, and this one does require its own specific stain because those reticular fibers, they're particular. So in this slide here, you'll notice they are thin and branching in the background. What type of cell nucleus is shown here? All of these. They're all fibroblast. Okay, so you've got a lot of fibroblast cells in this tissue, and their job is to build what? The matrix. So they build fibers, they build the matrix. And there's a lot of white space here, just reminding us this is, in fact, a loose good. All right, first impressions. What do you think this tissue looks like?
Grapes.
Yeah.
Grapes.
Yeah. I've had people tell me it looks like rose bushes, grapes.
Pomegranate
seeds. That's good. Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Especially when you look at this picture. To give you something to kind of relate to, we've talked about cytoskeleton throughout bio courses, and it serves as a cell skeleton. So what that means is a cytoskeleton gives shape to the cell. This is a tissue skeleton, meaning it does what? It shapes your tissues, right. Where do you find this? Bone marrow, two L words. Liver and lymph nodes, good. And the spleen, another one with an L in there.
Okay? And so if you think about the liver and the lymph nodes, the spleen and bone marrow, they're all soft. And in order to provide them with some scaffolding and some structure, this loose reticular tissue provides a skeleton or a scaffolding for that tissue. So think about these loose reticular fibers in here as providing a framework for those L organs. Liver, lymph nodes, spleen has an L in it too. All right, any trouble identifying this one or any questions about it? All right, so we've taken care of the three loose types. Let's now talk about the three dense types. The first one we're going to discuss is called dense regular connective tissue. And in fact, what you're looking at are wavy collagen fibers. The fibroblasts here are kind of squeezed. In fact, you'll notice like a dark piece every now and again. That is the nucleus of the fibroblast that's squeezed between layers and layers of collagen fibers. I want you to notice, though, the direction these collagen fibers run. Do they run together or do they run in all sorts of directions?
Together.
Good. So where you get the strength is the direction this one runs. If I were to pull at the end of this dense regular connective tissue, there's lots of tightly packed collagen fibers that are going to resist that pull and tug. So the way these are oriented on your joints gives us strength in our joints. So where would you find this dense regular connective tissue?
Tendons
and ligaments, and they're both found in your joints. And so if you think about your elbow, the way those tendons and ligaments are oriented is so to give your joint that strength. If you ever injure one of these by pulling across it, then it may separate and there's not a great blood supply here. Meaning, what about the... takes forever to heal. Exactly. So you may be looking at 6 to 8 weeks for one of these tissues to heal if it's injured. Okay, so main locations for this dense regular connective tissue is where?
Tendons
and ligaments. Good. The irregular part of this tissue is dealing with the arrangement of the fibers, those collagen fibers, and I think this looks like pork chop or meat. Looks swirly. What else does it look like to you? Looks like angry what?
Angry Van Gogh.
Somebody was mad painting. What's that?
Yes, my kids
painting. Yeah. And here's another one. So the dark spots here, these are fiber-growing cells called what?
Fibroblasts,
good. And all these fibers are what type?
Collagen.
They're all collagen, good. Now, if we were to pull or tug in any direction on this fiber, you've got strength. Because no matter how you pull or tug, there is a set of fibers weaving throughout this entire tissue. And for that reason, where do you often find this tissue? Dense irregular. Capsules of joints and
dermis.
Good. Here, in fact, is the dermis. Good. So this is a type of tissue that you don't want to have separate. You know, you very rarely, if ever, hear about somebody's skin just falling off, right? Just not a problem that we run into. And that's thanks to dense irregular and loose areolar holding the skin to the underlying muscle. All right, one more shot there of dense irregular. And our last one in this category is dense elastic connective tissue. What does the word elastic say to us?
Stretchy.
It's stretchy, good. And in fact, you should see some of those stretchy elastic fibers here, in addition to collagen fibers. This one is meant to be in a location where there is a great deal of stretch and recoil. So places where you're constantly having fluids flow through, you're going to find that you're having a lot of stretch in that area, such as where? Aorta, vocal cords, blood vessels oftentimes will have this, especially arteries will have it. Yeah. Okay, so that gives you several locations. Aorta, arteries, vocal cords. All right, so that should do it for page 46. How about questions on any of those? Need to see any pictures again? All right, so let's talk about cartilage. It's found on page 47. When you think of cartilage, what comes to mind?
Bones.
Bones, rubbery, nose. Do you think of it as being a tissue as strong as bone?
No,
it's not. It's flexible, it's rubbery, it is avascular, it contains no direct blood supply, which means if you break it, ouch, you got a heal time that's also rather long. So unfortunately, it takes a long time if you happen to damage or break cartilage. Hyaline cartilage is our first one, and it is a very pretty cartilage. It takes on a smooth, glassy appearance. And the reason for that is it has a few collagen fibers in the background, a lot of matrix, this rubbery matrix here in the background, and then there are chondrocytes embedded throughout that tissue. Because they're sites and not blast, what do they do for a living? Hang out. Yep, they're just mature cartilage cells. In fact, chondrocytes are embedded in a little air pocket called a what?
Lacuna.
Good. Literally, a lake. So the lake or air pocket around them gives a little cushioning to this tissue. You'll notice the nucleus in those chondrocytes. And of course, the air pocket around the chondrocyte, that's the lacuna. Every one of these hyaline cartilage pictures should look very smooth. There's a great deal of matrix in the background. And this one's kind of cool. You do see some collagen fibers running throughout the background of this tissue. This one's very common in the human body. Can you tell me two locations?
Nose and trachea.
Nose and trachea. Good, good. So you got some flexibility there. Not a great deal, but, you know, there's other places in your body where you have more flexible cartilage. Ribs, yeah, good. All right. So more hyaline cartilage. Nice look there at the lacuna. All right. So I think if you see enough of these, you start to say, yeah, they kind of look the same. They've got the same overall appearance. But then you look at fiber cartilage and you say, whoa, there's something different about the matrix of this one. It is full of what?
Elastic
fibers. Yeah, got a lot of fibers in the background here. And you'll notice that those fibers give kind of a wavy background appearance. And the reason for that is it's packed full of fibers that help to give some support and strength to this tissue. Now, the place that wears out on the human body as we get older. Ask somebody in their 60s, 70s, 80s what part of their body hurts.
Their back
and their knees, right? So as we get older, having the weight of our bodies pound on the knees and our backs wears out that fibrocartilage. So it's meant to be a cushioning but a supportive type of tissue. So how will you differentiate this one from hyaline cartilage? It's not clear. Got a lot of wavy fibers in the background. And how about the number of these chondrocytes? Looks like a lot less. Yeah, they're not quite as frequently found in those fibrocartilage samples. So you've seen enough now to say, okay, wait a minute, this looks a lot like dense regular connective tissue, right? Dense regular connective tissue has wavy collagen fibers, but what makes this one unique from, say, dense regular? Chondrocytes. Yeah, dense regular connective tissue, let's go back just for fun. Okay, so in dense regular, you shouldn't really be seeing those chondrocytes, they're not there. Don't see a lacuna in the dense regular connective tissue. Let's look at dense elastic. Just for fun. No chondrocytes, no lacuna there either. Okay, so use those chondrocytes in their lacuna as the telltale sign that you've got fiber cartilage. And there's another shot. The last type of cartilage we cover is called elastic cartilage, and the name tells you what you need to know. It's stretchy cartilage. Think about your ear. You can twist it, it pops back into shape. Your nose is not quite that forgiving with twisting, but your ear is. There are two E locations, and that's how I keep this one straight. E for elastic, E for ear, and one more E.
Epiglottis.
Good. So it is a very flexible flap that closes over your trachea when you swallow. So keep the E's straight for elastic cartilage. Elastic fibers found in two E locations. And probably the best way to identify this one, it looks almost like a set of jumbled angry alligator teeth. Notice those very tightly packed chondrocytes. Here's another one. So on either side, you have another tissue type. All this down here and up above is something else. What we're specifically looking at is the very tightly packed chondrocytes there through the middle. Any questions about differentiating between your three types of cartilages? Last two are easy to get straight. Compact bone and blood. And you may say, well, why are these considered connective tissue? Well, they do connect the body. They do have a matrix like other connective tissues. And what is something commonly found in pretty much any fibrous connective tissue? A matrix. Right, so they've got a matrix, they have fibers, they connect, protect, or support. That's something about their job. So that's why we put bone and blood in this category of connective tissue, even though they look a little different from everybody else that we've covered. What's another name for compact bone?
Osseous.
Osseous, good. Okay, how will you identify it? Rings. Okay, and in those rings are cells that are embedded there. They're mature bone cells called what?
Osteocytes.
Good. And those osteocytes are embedded in a little air pocket. It's still called a lacuna. Yes, yeah, so even though you can't see it as well here, there is a lacuna around every one of those osteocytes. All right, so obviously bones provide support. They provide an attachment point for our muscles. What else do bones do for us? Give us structure. And inside our bones is hollow, and that's where we make red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. Okay. So we'll talk more about the osteon structure that you see here. These are rings of calcium salts laid out. What is the matrix of bone made from? Calcium. Yeah, collagen and calcium. Yeah, so collagen provides the structure for that matrix, and the calcium salt provides the hardness for that matrix. You've got to have both collagen and calcium to give the strength and flexibility to bone. Otherwise, bone would be just as crumbly as chalk if you didn't have that collagen in there for the strength and that support. Do y'all have any trouble recognizing bone? Good. Okay.
I do have a question about the name. Like,
she should take either one,
okay.
Yeah.
So osteons, is that the same thing as
osteocytes? Osteons are, in fact, the rings that you see here. This whole setup of rings, the cells, the Habergeon canal in the middle that's the osteon, yeah. And we'll hit that again come chapter 6, so. All right, the last one is blood, and I think it's pretty easy to spot. This picture has all sorts of blood cells in it. The most common type of blood cell we've got is a red blood cell. The fancy name for it is what?
Erythrocyte.
Erythrocyte, good. Literally meaning it's a red cell. There's a lot of them here. They're kind of pink. They look like little donuts floating here, but they are like tires or inner tubes, but they're not hollow in the center like a tire. They're actually just flattened in the center. Breast savory, that's an excellent one. Good. So we have lots more red blood cells than we have of white blood cells or platelets. White blood cells are very specialized. You'll notice each one of them here has a slightly different look. That's because they fight a specific thing in your body. So they're very much programmed to fight whatever it is that they're targeting. All right, platelets, what do they do? Clot blood, good, good. And can you see the matrix in this picture? It's not in the picture. So there's no matrix here. All you've got is just blood cells. The matrix is in fact called what?
Plasma.
Yeah, it's the liquid part of blood, and it's not showing up in this picture. So, you know, it's mostly water, electrolytes, solutes, proteins, but no plasma visible here. What blood cell do you mostly see in this picture? Erythrocytes. Okay. And then here again, blood with everybody sampled. There's white blood cells. The little tiny fragments are platelets. What are some functions of blood? Transportation, immunity,
thermoregulation,
body temp regulation. Good. Okay, that gives you three. That should be good. All right. That takes us to the bottom of 47. Any questions? Is anything I can go back and hit? All right, so I know it's been since last week. What is the general category of this tissue?
Epithelial tissue.
Epithelial tissue, and its specific name?
Pseudostratified.
Yeah, I'd say pseudostratified. You sure it's pseudostratified? You feel comfortable with that? I agree. Yeah. Yeah, they're all sorts of... Yeah. Hey, for fun, looks like a blood vessel there. Do you know what kind of tissue that is? Probably cuboidal. Yeah, and this stuff down here?
Dense irregular.
Good. Makes you feel good. You're like, hey, I can do the whole slide, right?
Yeah,
I got more, yeah. All right, so we're looking specifically at this tissue, general, and specific, stratified squamous, and you're looking up top, right? Okay, and for fun, you probably can't tell because this is not a high enough mag, but it is connective tissue, yeah. Let's see, another review question. Where do you find transitional epithelial tissue? Urinary bladder, ureters, urethra, because all those locations stretch with urine. So keep the urinary system in mind when you're thinking of transitional. And how about two locations for simple cuboidal?
Kidney tubules.
Ovary surface. Good. Okay. All right. Well, you're over the hump now. You got through the worst stuff. It's all easy from this point forward. We just have muscle and nervous left. So let me take you over to page 48 for muscle tissue. Muscle tissue is built for movement, so you're going to find cells here that contract and shorten upon stimulation. And so we're going to cover three types. We're going to cover skeletal, cardiac, and smooth muscle tissue. You probably already know that there's a lot of common things among these tissues, but there's some differences too. In fact, which two types are involuntary? Cardiac and smooth are involuntary. What does that mean about them? Right. You can't control it. They move on their own. They contract on their own without your conscious input. Good. Which two types are striated?
Cardiac
and skeletal are striated, meaning what? They look striped, they contract in a certain way. And so that leaves smooth muscle kind of hanging out as the one that doesn't have visible striations or striping to it. So let's target skeletal muscle first. These pictures oftentimes look like striped snakes or striped hair. What else comes to mind when you see skeletal?
Guitar strings.
Oh, that's good, guitar strings. Maybe a straw that's been ribbed or striped, okay? So you'll notice the shape of the cells here. They're just long cylindrical tubes. They're the same size the entire length for the most part. They don't taper down, they don't branch, which is important, right, that they don't branch. These dark spots that you see are what? They're nucleus, good. So in your leg, for instance, there's a muscle that runs over your femur bone called the rectus femoris muscle. It's around 18 inches long. And in it, there are muscle fibers that run the entire length of that bone. And you think, gosh, that's a really long muscle fiber. Well, when they were formed, they were actually pieces of muscle cells that glued together end on end to continue making a really long muscle cell. So, in fact, you notice that these are multinucleate because multiple skeletal muscle cells fuse together. So that's why there are many nuclei in a skeletal muscle fiber or cell. Okay, this picture here is really pretty, full of nuclei. Does this one contract voluntarily or involuntarily?
Involuntary movement, but involuntary shiver.
Good, that is excellent. So voluntary movement, but you're right, you can shiver involuntarily here. And where does skeletal muscle attach to?
Facial tissue, the skeleton.
Good. Attaches to your face and, of course, to your bones. And, of course, it's voluntary movement. All right. And one more shot there of some skeletal muscle fibers running through this other tissue type. By comparison, cardiac muscle tissue is branched. And so these cells are not long and cylindrical. They, in fact, branch and part on us. They are striated. So if you're looking for striations, what are you actually looking for? Well, what do striations look like? Stripes. Good. Okay. So do you see the intercalated discs here? Yeah, there's one there. Looks like one midway through right there. And these are actually gap junctions. So way back when we studied gap junctions, what do gap junctions do for cells that sit next to each other?
Share.
It's like an open doorway. So when your heart contracts, ions, fluids, nutrients, whatever the case, can flow through those open gap junctions, and those cardiac muscle cells can contract together as a unit. So that's important because we need the atria and the ventricles of your heart to operate as a unit, pumping together. So that is unique to cardiac muscle tissue. This is the only one to have these intercalated discs.
What's
that? To contract the heart and pump blood. Do you see the intercalated discs here? Okay, so they're pretty visible as lines. The branching pattern is not tremendously great here, but you kind of get a sense that these are not cylindrical tubes like you saw with our skeletal muscle tissue. Here you can see the striations. Can you see the intercalated discs?
Yeah.
Okay.
They branched.
Yeah, they do branch really nicely. Here's a good branch. And so the branching pattern is important because when a nerve impulse travels throughout your heart muscle tissue, we don't want it to come in a wave, and we don't want your heart to contract sequentially in waves, we want the entire muscle tissue of your ventricle to contract together as a unit. So that's how we get the message to all parts of your heart really quickly. We let it go through these branch cells that split up and carry the message throughout all the muscle tissue really fast.
So when you say branch, when you look at that and say you look for branches, are you talking about like one strip, one line, or like?
I'm looking for, see these cells down here look like they start out kind of together, uh-huh. And then it looks like they separate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't mean like a...
So that right there at the end would be like a branch.
Yeah, that sure would be.
Right there.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Yep, that would be a good one. And let's see if we've got some others. Here, it looks like they're kind of hanging out together and then they start to split apart. Mm-hmm. So it's not branched like an arm of a tree coming off, but it's just like they're splitting apart.
Splitting apart.
Yeah. All right, so smooth muscle is our next one. What makes it smooth?
No striations.
No striations, good. And this tissue is found in what locations?
Stomach.
Good, stomach, intestines, walls of vessels like arteries, good. Okay, so you may want to be specific and say the wall because the lining of the stomach is something else, right? Okay, lining of blood vessels is something else. So these are muscle tissues found specifically in the walls of these organs. You'll notice that these have one nucleus per cell. I know this is a deceiving picture. It kind of looks like what? It might look like connective tissue. It might look like stratified squamous. Yeah, but the reason it's not epithelial tissue is it has no
basement membrane
and no apical surface. Great. Yeah. So when you're on the test and you see something, you know, think for a minute. What all could this be before you jot down that answer? Because this one does look like something else. In fact, if you lay smooth muscle with dense regular, they also look a lot alike. But what makes dense regular a little different? Collagen fibers, and it's wavy. Those collagen fibers are always somewhat wavy. Smooth muscle, you're seeing those nuclei. In fact, if you go back to the better picture here, there's lots of nuclei in all of, you know, one per cell, but there's lots of cells showing up here. Okay. So smooth muscle has no striations. It is involuntary. What other muscle tissue is involuntary? Cardiac. Good. Do you need to see any of these three again? Okay. Last one is nervous tissue. We save the easy one for the last, right? If you're asked general category, the answer is the same as specific category, right? It is nervous tissue, no matter how you slice it. And the thing to look for are neurons, which I think look like a steamrolled octopus. So you'll notice all these processes coming off here. These processes are conducting nerve impulses to and from this cell body. And right dead center there, that looks like an octopus eye, but that's in fact what? That's the nucleus, good. In this tissue, can you spot the neurons? Nice one here in the middle. There's other ones, okay? There's more to this nervous tissue than just those conducting neurons. There's also other types of cells. They're called neuroglia or nerve glue. They kind of help support and insulate and protect those cells. We'll talk more about neuroglia as we get into a later chapter. What would you say is the function for nervous tissue? Good. Send stimuli, control effectors. Effectors are things like glands and organs. So we may tell your sweat glands to sweat. We may tell your salivary glands to produce saliva. We may also tell your brain that the surface you're touching is slimy or too hot or too cold. So Locations for these? Where's two great locations?
Brain
and spinal cord. Two great locations. Good. I like nervous tissue. It is simple and sweet. That's it for nervous tissue, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So to finish up this chapter, I would like to take you over to page 50. We'll cover just a little bit on membranes. You all have membranes on your test too, right?
No, ma'am.
No membranes? Okay. I thought y'all did have some. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do.
Pericardium?
We did that in the beginning, though, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Pericardium, membrane, and...
Pleural.
Yeah, we have all those.
Okay.
Carpineal, yep.
Good. We'll hit those in. Okay. Before we dive into membranes, let me take you through a little bit of tissue injury and tissue repair. If you happen to injure a tissue, it goes through a set of stages to heal that tissue. And so at the top of the page there, we're going to talk about tissues that respond to inflammation and heal quickly versus those that are slow to heal. So let's just take the epithelials first. Where would you place them? Heal quickly. So all epithelial tissues grow pretty fast, some faster than others, but the nature of them growing fast means that if you damage an epithelial tissue, it's probably going to repair pretty fast. You know, on average, we're looking at about 2 weeks to repair the lining of your esophagus and stomach. In fact, every 2 weeks, you're going to have a new set of cells replace the old cells inside your digestive tract. Your skin, well, we replace dead skin cells every 2 to 4 weeks. So there's a lot of growth going on the skin surface, too. So, yeah, epithelial tissues are ones that tend to grow pretty quickly. Let's see. Let's talk about the connective tissues. Where would you place, say, loose connective tissues? Heals quickly. Good. So what were those loose connective tissue types? In reticular, so areolar, adipose, and reticular, they do tend to grow and heal fairly quickly.
Of course,
yeah. Of course, the fat tissue does, right? Dense connective tissues like tendons and ligaments and the dermis of your skin don't heal quickly, if at all. If you're female and you have scratch marks, forget it, right? All they can do is make them less shiny for you. But what happens is when you grow quickly, the dermis stretches and thins and it can tear. And you have a shiny stretch mark left behind that's irreparable. So that, unfortunately, is one of those tissues that doesn't heal very well at all. All right, so that takes care of those two. Where would you place cartilages?
Slow
healer. Good. People often say that if you had the choice, like you do, if you could break cartilage or bone, pick bone, because bone heals quickly and cartilage does not. Cartilage is very poor to repair itself because it's mostly avascular. There's blood vessels around the outside, but for the most part, there's not a whole lot of blood traveling into that dense, rubbery matrix, so it does take a long time to heal. Speaking of bone, where would you place it? Yeah, it heals quickly. Blood heals quickly. I know that sounds weird to say that blood heals quickly, but you might say that blood regrows quickly. Every 5 to 7 days, you are turning over new populations of blood cells, so we've got to make new ones all the time to replace the old ones that are being processed out. So
we do have new bone and new blood constantly being remodeled, produced, so that way we're maintaining ourselves. Let's talk about muscle tissue. Where would you put cardiac and skeletal? They actually don't. So let's put them in the slow category. Cardiac and skeletal tissues don't heal very well. Cardiac especially, if you think about somebody who's had heart damage from, say, a heart attack, you know, a lot of times that tissue is irreparable, and we have to do things like bypass to make sure that blood gets to that area. So if a cardiac muscle tissue is damaged, it oftentimes is not going to regrow and repair itself. There have been some really cool things done in science where they've taken stem cells and put it into some heart tissue, and the heart tissue can regrow if those stem cells are present. So maybe on the horizon for people with heart muscle damage, there may be a way to repair damaged muscle tissue. Let's see, smooth muscle actually does repair itself pretty well. And if you think about its location, that makes sense. Where do you find smooth muscle? Wall of your stomach, wall of the intestines, blood vessels. Okay, so the walls of those blood vessels have smooth muscle. If you have blood vessels that are incapable of repairing their smooth muscle, then we've got problems, right? So we want to make sure that we maintain the integrity of those vessels of our digestive system. And then, so of course, smooth muscle does tend to repair pretty fast. Last, where do you think nervous tissue should go? It is slow to heal. You know, that nervous tissue doesn't tend to like to repair itself, especially if you're older than your mid-teenage years. There is some regrowth for nervous tissue up until around age 16, and then after that we become pretty pruned. And they say that our nervous tissue is unlikely to repair or regrow once we hit about mid-teenage years.
That's why all those head injuries you have in football.
Exactly, because if you're 18 years old getting head injuries, then you're past that point for repair and growth. Yeah. Yeah. Imagine even for a 12-year-old that's still got that plasticity, that's still not a good thing. So let's talk about how you heal a tissue, and we're going to start off with inflammation. Inflammation doesn't feel very good. If you've had inflamed skin before, then it feels rather uncomfortable, and you probably have done something to try to get rid of that nasty feeling that comes with inflammation. So inflammation actually has four cardinal signs. Inflamed tissue is often red, hot, swollen, and painful. So when a tissue is inflamed, what we're trying to do is bring in cells and white blood cells and agents that can help to repair this tissue. I'll show you what happens when we start damaging tissue and when we have these agents move in. Okay, so when you damage tissue, the vessels around the damaged tissue become leaky. That not only allows part of your blood plasma to escape into the surrounding tissue, it also allows white blood cells to escape to that surrounding tissue. In doing that, we let those white blood cells start the repair process. They initiate the inflammatory process. They help to start mediating whatever damage there has been by eating up and getting rid of those bacteria or other items that might be present in that tissue. If y'all want to go study for lab tests, you're welcome to leave. If you want to study for lab tests. Okay. So the first phase here is histamine making vessels leak. And when vessels leak, the skin becomes red, hot, swollen, painful. So if you've had a mosquito bite, that's histamine making the vessels leak. That's the fluid escaping into the surrounding cells and tissues. And inflammation doesn't feel very nice. It feels pretty nasty wherever that tissue is inflamed. We often take anti-inflammatory medications, things like Advil, Tylenol. Those NSAIDs oftentimes are taken to reduce inflammation, but inflammation is there to help start the healing process. As awful as it feels, it's actually the first phase of healing those damaged tissues. The next thing that happens with the damaged tissue is we bring in white blood cells. They not only have cleaned up the area so that we don't have dead tissue inside, they'll eat that stuff away, but we're going to start building new cells and new tissues. We use new fibroblasts to help bring in more fibers, and then we start repairing that tissue. So if you have a lot of fibroblast left behind, you have this nasty stuff called scar tissue left in place. So if you've got scar tissue on your body, is it very flexible?
No.
It's not. And unfortunately, if scar tissue affects your skin, you don't have the regular glands, you probably don't have feeling in that tissue, you may not even have hair on that tissue. So scar tissue is hopefully not the way that we leave damaged tissue. If your tissue is able, it will replace that with normal cells and other glands, whatever needs to be there. But this is part of that regeneration phase of repairing that damaged tissue. So we'll talk a little more about this when we get into our Chapter 5 info and talk about skin. We'll actually revisit all of this later on. Do y'all have any questions on page 50? Okay, so I know this membrane stuff will show up on your test today, so let me hit those membranes for you. They're 51-52. Membrane classifications should sound familiar. They are based on the tissues that are found in them. Membranes are, in fact, very simple organs. So if you think about the hierarchy of the way the human body is built, we know that cells build tissues, tissues build organs. So in order to be a membrane or an organ, you have to have at least two tissues working together. So membranes are our most simple organs in the human body. Imagine you can probably guess what type of tissue is common in epithelial membranes. Epithelial, right? And connective membranes have connective tissues. So keep that in mind. That will make it a lot easier. There are three types of epithelials. We'll talk about cutaneous membranes first. And so cutaneous sounds like what body part?
Skin.
Skin. Good. All right, so looking at this picture, do you recognize the type of epithelial tissue up top?
Stratified squamous.
Good. And the stuff down below?
Connective tissue.
And it looks like? Yeah, it looks like dense irregular. Notice those fibers running in all sorts of different directions. Do you see the basement membrane here?
Yes.
Okay, so just want to make sure that was easy to spot. Okay, and your oldest epithelial cells, are they closest to the basement membrane or the apical surface?
Apical
surface, good. So this in the past, we just got through talking about as two separate tissue types. Now we're saying these two work together and they are called a membrane. To be specific, it is a cutaneous membrane and it contains a type of waterproofing protein called what?
Keratin.
Keratin, good. So the only place you find keratin is on your skin, not inside your body. So that question on your worksheet, what makes this membrane dry? It is keratin. Okay, so what makes this membrane dry? It is keratin. Mucous membranes are moist because of the mucus that they produce. And I did want to mention here a difference in the spelling for the word mucus. When you're referencing a membrane that produces mucus, it's spelled with an O-U-S ending. But if you talk about the sticky substance itself, that mucus is actually spelled with just U-S as an ending. So you may see it spelled two ways and wonder, you know, maybe there's a typo. It actually references whether you're talking about the membrane, O-U-S, versus the sticky substance, which is just an ending of U-S. All right, so no matter how you spell it, these membranes are found on the insides of your bodies, and they are found in those organ systems that have holes opening to the outside world. So on your head end, we have respiratory, which is lined with moist mucous membrane. What other system on your head end is lined with moist mucous membrane? Mouth. Good. So digestive, from mouth all the way to the anus, the entire inside is lined with moist mucous membrane. Do you think mucous membranes produce keratin? Because keratin makes the membrane dry. Yes, so no keratin here. And what two tissue types do you think make up a moist mucous membrane? Epithelial and connective, yes. Yeah. So in your mouth, what type of epithelial tissue do we have? Stratified squamous, good. And say in your stomach, what kind of moist mucous membrane epithelial?
Simple columnar.
Simple columnar, good. So we always have some type of epithelial making up a moist mucous membrane with an underlying layer of connective tissue. Just a reminder, a lot of these moist mucous membranes do have goblet cells. What do goblet cells make? Mucus, good. So they look like clear hollow cells in this picture. There's lots of them here. And of course, you're right, they do make and secrete mucus. So, you know, we oftentimes think of mucus in our nasal cavities. Obvious reason there is to trap what?
Dust
and bacteria particles, viruses. But we also make it in our intestines and our stomach because it traps the very same stuff there. Not dust, but bacteria and viruses that get that far in our bodies. All right. The purpose of mucus there is to trap bacteria, and viruses. Mucus is also great for lubrication. Okay, so that purpose of mucus is to trap bacteria and viruses. Also great for lubrication. The last type of epithelial membrane is called a serous membrane. It looks like it's serous, but minus that I. You'll notice it's mostly simple squamous epithelium. There is underlying connective tissue, but it depends on where we're at. This is how a typical serous membrane is made. Imagine it folds in on itself, creating an inner single layer of cells and an outer single layer of cells. So this visceral layer is simple squamous epithelial tissue. The outer parietal layer is also a single layer of simple squamous epithelial tissue. What do you find between the visceral and the parietal layer? Serous fluid, good. You know, and it's got kind of the same function as mucus. It is there to lubricate and reduce friction around organs because these two layers will glide past each other. All right, so that question there, what is the purpose of serous fluid? Serous fluid lubricates and reduces friction around organs. It lubricates and reduces friction around organs. To kind of give you an idea of how thin these two layers are, they are no thicker than a soap bubble. So if you think about the outside surface of your heart, lungs, and digestive organs, you've got these really thin layers of simple squamous over top of a connective tissue. So it's certainly a thin type of membrane, but it does help to lubricate these two ventral cavity organ systems. Okay, so which is the innermost of the two layers? Good. And the one that touches the organ is called what layer?
Visceral.
And which layer contacts the body cavity wall? Parietal. Yes, so visceral contacts the organ. It is the innermost layer. And of course, parietal is the one that contacts your body cavity wall. Both layers do secrete serous fluid. So let's flip over to page 52. Let's talk through those three types of serous membranes. The serous membrane around your heart has a special name. It's called what? Pericardium. Good, pericardium. The portion of that membrane that touches your heart is called the visceral pericardium. What portion of the membrane contacts your body wall? Parietal. Good. And the fluid, of course, is found between those two layers, like you can see there. So if you ever have pericarditis, inflammation of that pericardial sac, that makes people feel like they're having a heart attack. So things like smoking and pneumonia can cause pericarditis when that sac gets inflamed. The next term, or actually the first term with the blank on your worksheet, is peritoneum, and now we'll look at that one. This type of covering is found on what organs?
Abdominal,
good. So you've got your digestive organs covered by this type of membrane. Even females have the upper part of the uterus covered by this membrane. Pretty much any organ, not everyone, but most organs below your diaphragm are covered on the outside by this peritoneum. So you can see in the bottom picture, this looks clear. That, in fact, is the membrane. There are blood vessels that travel through that membrane. So kind of think of it like a saran wrap covering for the outer portion of your organs. The bad news about this membrane is any infection down here
goes everywhere.
You're right. Yep. So appendicitis ruptures, you've got it now all over the entire abdominopelvic cavity. You know, bacterial infections, viruses, cancer cells, everything can travel all over that peritoneum. So unfortunately, that's a downside of having everything on the outside connected. Let me just reemphasize, this membrane is not the lining of your organs. It instead is the outer covering. It's a gift wrap on the outside of your organs in the abdominopelvic cavity. Okay, so your blank there is peritoneum, is found around the digestive organs. That's the main ones. You'll notice the term mesentery. It's just another word we use to describe the peritoneum. We did the heart already. Pericardium is found around the heart. And then last there in the center is pleura. This is a covering around what?
The lungs.
The visceral pleura is actually in contact with what?
The lung.
And the parietal pleura is found body cavity wall. Yeah, so it in fact is adhered to your chest wall, front and back. So this is the reason we can breathe. If you ever impair or poke a hole in those pleura, lungs collapse. So it's important that those lungs stay inflated by having intact pleura. You can see in this picture, the lungs and the heart, the pleura and pericardium, all sit next to each other. There's a lot of movement here, believe it or not. You know, the heart's beating constantly. The lungs inflate and deflate with air. We need all the help we can get to reduce friction as those organs move past one another. All right, so transitioning out of the epithelial membranes, let's now talk about a totally different type of membrane at the bottom of your page. And this one is called a synovial joint membrane, or a synovial membrane. Okay, so the types of tissues found in a connective membrane are real easy. They're connective in nature. What's that? The cartilages, the loose and the dense. Yeah, all of those. Good. Synovial membranes are found in our movable joints. That's our second question. Synovial membranes are found in our movable joints. And I make that point because teeth are joints, and they don't have synovial fluid or synovial membranes. Your skull sutures are joints, and they don't have synovial membranes. So I mean specifically things like elbows, knees, fingers, wrist, good. But not your back, not your teeth, nor your skull sutures. Those others are a little different. So these membranes surround a movable joint, are called synovial membranes, and they produce a fluid called synovial fluid. And if you've noticed the theme here, serous fluid, mucus, what did they have in common?
Lubricate,
reduce friction. Same job. Okay, so the same job applies to synovial fluid, except we're talking about here, we lubricate and reduce friction in our joints. Okay, so the purpose is to lubricate and reduce friction in the joints. Lubricate and reduce friction in the joints. All right, so that is actually where we needed to go today, was to page 52. We'll start on page 54 on Thursday, but I wanted to give you guys just a few extra minutes to go and get your mind clear for the lab test at 11. So unless you have any questions, y'all are free to go today.